Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Everyone has a fave Wendy's Frosty flavor. And when you're choosing from chocolate or vanilla, it's not that hard. But now, there's all new Frosty Swirls and Frosty Fusions. So try picking your fave from Oreo Brownie Fusion, Pop-Tarts Strawberry Fusion, Strawberry Swirl, Brownie Batter Swirl, Caramel Swirl, and Caramel Crunch Fusion. Not so easy now, huh? For a fresh way to Frosty, gotta be Wendy's. Open till midnight or later.
At participating U.S. Wendy's, hours may vary by location. Oreo is a trademark of Mondelez International Group. Pop-Tarts is a trademark of Kellogg North America Co. LLC, used with permission.
As if they don't have too much on their plates, the Kings of Combat Sports Podcast, John and Wade, they talk about the things they did that day, they'll analyze the work of Triple H.
We want to smack down. And hello, everybody listening to us or watching us on the free feed, whether it be on YouTube or on our podcast platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to this. Welcome to Rewind a Smackdown. My name is Wei Tang. I am joined once again here by Neil Flanagan. And we just went through a whole lot of news stories, didn't we, Neil?
We certainly did, Wei. Yes, quite a bit of news in the last couple of days to catch up on. And happy to sit in for John and give him a well-earned night off. He will be back for Slammiversary duties this weekend for those in a cafe.
But it is a very busy weekend here at Post Wrestling because, we are talking about SmackDown tonight, but in the Post Wrestling Cafe, starting tomorrow, we have got you covered with everything that's coming out, including Collision Course with Kate from Montreal and the debuting John Clanchester, the person who does a lot of our reports usually at postwrestling.com in written form. He will be making an audio debut on this particular show. So listen for that. We've also got a UFC 318 review with Jack Wannen and Eric Marcotte. Jack Wannen playing, doing double duty on Sunday, mm-hmm. because he'll be rejoining John Pollock later in the evening for a TNA Slammiversary review. You expect that, I believe, live on Sunday in the Post Wrestling Cafe and in the feeds early Monday morning for those of you choosing to watch. But of course, it is the beginning of G1 coverage here at Post. And on Sunday as well, we've got Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson talking about the G1 climax, night one and night two. All right, both of those. Do you know how many matches we got on each night, John? Neil?
I do. 20 matches, a mere 20 matches they have to.
20 matches, okay? If you, last week was just a warm-up, all right? If maybe an all-in Saturday night's main event, Evolution, Great American Bash, that was just an appetizer for the real main event, the G1 opening weekend, all right? For people like myself who might only dip into New Japan once or twice a year, this will get you right caught up, all right? You'll get a great sense of everything that's going on here by just even watching this opening weekend alone. We got Bruce and Karen talking about it. It's the return of our individual rating systems, as confusing as they all are. You will get a great sense of that too, following the set of coverage. But I'm looking forward to it. I'm on board. I'm even like going to try to plan a bit of a workout routine, Neil. I've got like this under the desk treadmill that I plan on using as I'm watching the G1. That'll hopefully motivate me to get to my 10,000 steps a day using the G1. So join in that way, maybe. Of course, we've
good plan, Wei. I like it.
I'm trying to be productive, you know, with my wrestling viewing these days. Yeah. We've also, of course, got our G1 pool, which at this point is closed. So hopefully you guys got all your entries in. Neil, did you?
I did, yes. I was inspired, and free listeners can, I believe this was free, the preview of the G1 that John and Bruce put out inspired me to get my picks in at the pretty much last minute.
I shall see you in the C block, Neil.
Okay. Yes.
We shall see who will dominate the post-wrestling universe. As we update everybody throughout the course of the G1 with how you guys may have done, if you or one of the few to enter the pool. It's always fun to enter it, no matter how you may be feeling about like your level of engagement in New Japan. I think G1 is almost always worthwhile of a sort of watch experiment, and will probably almost always come out with some of the year's best matches through a tournament like this. So as Neil mentioned, we got a great preview up right now with Bruce Lord and John Pollock going through the entire field. That's out on the free feed right now, and tune in starting this weekend. In fact, I think we are going to offer this first episode for free on the Post Wrestling Cafe. So as we've said many times in the past, if you are a member of the Post Wrestling Cafe, obviously you can join the paid tier, which gives you access to everything. You can also join the free tier, which only requires you to sign up, creating an account at Patreon, and we'll occasionally give out some of these freebies, one of those being our G1 opening weekend review with Bruce Lord and Kate from Montreal. And Karen Peterson, I should say. Kate will be joining me a little bit later on in G1 coverage. But sign up for a free account at postwrestlingcafe.com to get this first episode for free, along with several other freebies we will occasionally put out there. So that is postwrestlingcafe.com. Mm-hmm. Neil, want to talk about tonight's SmackDown?
Let's do it. Why, yes.
Yeah, so this is SmackDown coming off of a very, very busy weekend in WWE TV. And big thing on the show, of course, is the advertised John Cena Cody Rhodes contract signing to come later on in the evening. This is from San Antonio, Texas. According to WrestleTix, 15,000 tickets out. All right, probably near a sellout by the time the show started in San Antonio. We start things off, Neil, with a car accident. Okay.
Yes, we haven't had this for a while.
No, when was the last car accident we saw in WWE?
The one I remember, the one this put me in mind of, although I don't have all of the details to the top of my memory, was 5 years ago, because I know it was the pandemic, when outside the performance center there was a car crash, and it was a very distasteful angle. They kind of painted it as a framing of, I don't know if you remember this, a framing of Jeff Hardy drink driving.
Oh my goodness.
And I think it was Elias was hit by a car, and, you know, Jeff was framed because someone had doused him in alcohol, and the police arrived, and all of that. And also in my memory, I don't think the real culprit was ever was ever found. I think it was one of those storylines they just let sort of fade away.
Sheamus like doing?
Sheamus was because someone with red hair had been described as being running away. I think, if memories, it's amazing the things we remember from 5 years ago and the things we don't. But I feel like the storyline never actually got a conclusion in my memory.
I'd say most of the time, if it involves a car accident, I don't know if it's usually in great taste in professional wrestling. In this case, I mean, it wasn't really all that bad. It was the MFTs outside the arena. It's the site of a car accident. Everybody is panicking here, and most of which, poor Tongaloa, our master, our lord, the real tribal chief Tongaloa, with his eye busted open as a result of this car accident. So is Tongaloa okay? I don't know. I hope he came out of this without too many injuries. So
Stay tuned to find out. That was the big hook. Tongaloa is bleeding.
So Wade Barrett suggests that it could be an intentional incident, given all the enemies of the MFT. So that is our show-long mystery, or at least hour-long mystery. Who hit the MFTs?
Yeah. This was kind of goofy. Like, you know, Cody wanders in with his... with his clipboard with the contract in it, doesn't give a shit about what's happening behind him because he just wants to talk to Adam Pearce, who's taking the reins from Aldis this week. But, you know, Tess thanks our ace reporter, as he describes Kathy Kelly, who's on the scene for this mayhem. Everyone seems to be there. I can see Jason Jordan over Cody's shoulder. Hmm. We know Pearce was there, but... nobody saw anything,
yeah,
as usual.
Yeah. More on this a bit later as we discuss it, the resolution to this hour-long show angle. We go to the back where we see Charlotte and Alexa speaking. Charlotte, rather than being dismissive of her team with Alexa after coming up short at Evolution in that tag team match, has asked for and has been granted another tag team title shot. Where's the lineup? Where's like the number one contenders match? You know, lose a match and then just get another title match. Is that it?
Well, her explanation for this is I'm still Charlotte Flair. So, you know,
gotcha.
That's it. If you're Charlotte Flair, you can get.
She earned it by biggest reaction at Evolution, perhaps. So in a reverse of last week's scene, now it's Charlotte asking Alexa to back her up in a singles match this week. So they have a little bit of a back and forth mirroring last week's segment, but this time with their roles reversed. So Charlotte is definitely warming up to the idea of teaming with Alexa, but they're still kind of playing. They're very much flirting with each other. I'm still not your friend, she says.
Yeah, they're playing hard to get.
In the back, did you notice? We saw Julia. And who is Julia standing with? Did you notice?
I did not.
So, somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but I could have sworn that this might have been a Kiana James sighting. Unless I'm mistaken, then it's just somebody completely different who looks like her. But it looked like somebody of that stature, and it's not Kiana James is a name that we haven't really seen or heard from in a long, long time. So I wonder if it is. I wonder if it's something else. But anyway,
Slim Sieber in the chat seems to think it was.
Yeah,
I did not spot this.
Okay, interesting. So I wonder if it means that she will be ready at some point. Okay, so we got the match here. We've got Charlotte versus Raquel Rodriguez. A preview of the tag team match that is to come, because of course we seemingly official Charlotte and Alexa versus Raquel and Roxanne at SummerSlam. Joe Tessitore reminds us and emphasizes Charlotte's massive pop in Atlanta at Evolution, using those words.
Yeah.
Massive pop. So pop,
despite my people who listen to Ask Away will have heard my question this month, which was about wrestling lingo getting into the sort of mainstream. And I feel like pop is one of those ones that has crossed over.
You think so, huh?
A little, yeah. I've heard people talk about the pop that someone gets outside of the wrestling.
Yeah, it makes me wonder how. How did like pop get there, you know? There are certain things that I think work because there's really no better way to describe it than like, let's say like heel, right? Like heel, yeah. Just kind of like it describes the idea of like somebody intentionally playing a villain really well, right? But pop, it's just like ovation, applause, like aren't there
positive
other words?
Reaction, you know, there are lots of boring ways to put it, but and it's again, it's these are not words I would ever use in my writing on the site and so on, and I do find it a little cringeworthy when people start to use the lingo, but her pop, it didn't strike me as crazy for Tessitore to say this.
No, we're hyper focusing on it, of course, but it's we all understand what he means. This is unreal, Neil. Okay, we're bleeding reality
through the looking glass
fiction.
Way.
So we've got Charlotte versus Raquel Rodriguez. Again, the commentators are trying to emphasize the very babyface reaction Charlotte Flair received at Evolution, seemingly encouraging or expecting, you know, a copycat reaction. And did you feel like Charlotte received one tonight?
I was listening for it, and I felt at the beginning she didn't quite get it. Now, this may have been in a mix of all of the music and so on, and the fact that when Raquel was billed as from Texas, she got a little bit of a pop from the crowd
massive
as well.
Pop.
She got a massive pop. So it certainly wasn't on the level of the ovation that Charlotte got at Evolution. And I think you're right in your assessment of that crowd as being somewhat different from the usual. You know, they were doing the sort of one fall stuff and all of that. They seemed a little hardcore compared to your average crowd. But anyway, she was positively received. There certainly weren't any audible boos. And I think, you know, we'll talk about the match, but during the match that only increased. And booking Charlotte against one of the very few other women on the roster who is bigger than she is and is of the same sort of height, I think was smart here, because it meant that she could take a bit of a beating as well and get that kind of, you know, sympathy reaction to it in parts of the match.
So Raquel dominates through a commercial break. When we come back, Charlotte is fighting back and the crowd is with her for her chops and her comeback. And I will say Wade, I think, was trying to make that reception sound a lot bigger than it actually was. Yeah. Raquel rolls through on a high cross attempt, catches Charlotte and goes for like a version of the Tour of the Islands with a power slam for a two count. Charlotte escapes the Tahana bomb, hits her big boot, and then she attempts the figure four, but that ends when Roxanne distracts her. Meanwhile, on the other side of the apron, with the ref distracted, Alexa attacks Raquel, leading to Charlotte hitting a kick and rolling Raquel up for the victory. So this is another win that further bonds Alexa and Charlotte closer together. Charlotte is getting a lot much cuter than her icy cold self. She prompts Alexa to make a heart with their joined hands, and they, again, you're definitely sensing commentary trying to run and trying to replicate the babyface reaction Charlotte received then. I think the pace of production to me felt like they were leaving gaps for the crowd to like give a similar ovation to Charlotte at Evolution, and it just simply did not come. But it also wasn't a negative reaction either, yeah. You know, and I sense, like, especially listening to commentary here, that maybe future crowds will start to realize, oh, we're supposed to be cheering for Charlotte, just yeah. like as loud as Evolution now is. So I think that will encourage it. And I don't sense like crowds turning on Charlotte now. Like there seems to have been a conscious sort of like realization that like this person's been through a lot. And maybe mm-hmm. we even like her team with Alexa right now.
Yeah, I agree. We got I think the direction in the ears of these guys was definitely to keep going on about how popular she was at Evolution. And like you said, gaps in production almost for hearing, the crowd being very positive about Charlotte. It wasn't quite that, but there was in no way whatsoever the crowd turning on her either, and there were no audible boos. She was treated as a baby face, albeit not as like hugely popular as she was this past Sunday. So I think mission accomplished so far, and pairing these two up I think is wise.
Yeah, I honestly did not like, I still don't like a lot of the backstage interaction these two have.
Very wooden.
Yeah, it just feels like so maybe over the top cutesy that like it's hard for me to kind of buy any sort of real tension between the two. But I've seen them on screen enough now that like even if like this sort of relationship to me kind of came out of nowhere with no prior establishing on screen, having seen them so often together now, I am starting to get into it, and I certainly think the audience is starting to get into it, and they're liking the dynamic between the two. I'm hoping to see it evolve as, you know, now that the crowd might be on both of their sides.
The only thing that crossed my mind by the end of this match and the sort of union of the two in the entrance way was, why not? Because they don't shy away from this now. Why not show the reception that Charlotte had got?
Right.
At Evolution, you know, on your television show, that I think would have gone some way.
Mm-hmm. I also listen. Like I think we could be somewhat critical about maybe the overuse of the salon for like these sort of NXT, you know, odd couple types of pairings. But I do think like there is room for some of that stuff between these two, just to kind of show us what the dynamic actually is outside of like a wrestling setting, you know.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right.
free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's G1 Climax season, and that means the Post Wrestling Cafe has you covered with podcasts covering every single tournament match. Plus, Rewind Away goes back to review the best of the WWF Volume 16. We'll also have reviews of UFC 318, TNA Slammiversary, a special Ask Away edition, and of course, XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, ad-free with the news of the week and your feedback. Sign up now at postwrestlingcafe.com.
All right, let's go up next. The police are looking for Jacob Fatu because they say that he is a person of interest in the car crash involving the MFTs. Fatu, of course, is reluctant to go with the police, but Adam Pearce eventually convinces him. So, Jacob Fatu, did he do it? More on this.
I enjoyed this for several reasons. First of all, Jake, since when has he ever been called Jake? Pierce is looking for him, so he's yelling his name, and he becomes Jake rather than Jacob. And then
they might have a personal relationship that we don't know about. It's like Charlotte calling Alexa Blister.
Yeah, and these cops in inverted commas with their performance center haircuts get called the punk ass police by Jacob as well.
Oh man,
he's not very nice to these police officers.
Yeah, they were certainly not careful about, having a baby face talk shit about the police. You know, that was, in fact, one of his baby face character traits they were portraying. Spat on a cop car, everything. So we go up next to a Jade Cargill versus Tiffany Stratton hype video, and we learn that they have a lot in common with each other. Both have had their friendships destroyed in this company. Both have won gold, although Tiffany says she's the only person to keep hers. Jade has let Naomi distract her long enough, and now she can focus on what she's really here for, and that is, of course, the championship. Tiffany Stratton says that she has been underestimated as a dumb blonde, but however, despite all that, it's not Trish Stratus nor anybody else with the championship. It is her. Jade says she's also been doubted and disrespected, and she still walks through every storm. She's going to end Tiffany Stratton because the storm is coming. So
interesting enough, decent sort of start to the build for this. We've only got 2 weeks until SummerSlam. It's two baby faces. That's an interesting dynamic, giving them their motivations for this match. I think it's a decent enough start. Obviously, heavily written, heavily edited together. I think the proof of the pudding will be much more in coming weeks. We've got two more SmackDowns before SummerSlam. If we get some heat between these two women, in the ring.
Yeah, with such little time to go, I can't expect much of a grudge to be established between these two, right? Like, I certainly don't expect either of them to, even really be turning, in a short amount of time. Like, after this video, we've only got two more weeks, one of them being the go-home episode, mm-hmm. right? Like, the day before the event. So I get the sense this is going to be pretty much the story. It's two baby faces who are young. Jade Cargill looking to prove her doubters wrong and achieve the goal that she's been here to finally achieve. And maybe Tiffany Stratton looking to prove that she's still the face of the new generation in the company.
Wanting to cement her place, and both have been, overcome adversity. It's a decent enough story for...
But it's not hot for SummerSlam, I will suggest,
I do agree. And that was my kind of overall view of what is going to be a two-night event by the end of this episode, because we did get some hot shot booking for SummerSlam. There's no two ways about it.
Yeah, so it makes me wonder what they can do to really kind of ramp this one up so that it feels like it's a title level match at SummerSlam, because at present it definitely feels like it's something for lower on the card, at least in terms of interest. Maybe they could have like a, you know, via satellite segment where one person could like really step on the other person's lines and create a bit of an internet storm that way.
And then bring up some real life drama, perhaps.
Oh, well, maybe let's not go too far. Damian Priest, earlier in the day, has been looking for Aleister Black. Instead, he finds Carmelo Hayes, and he asks Carmelo Hayes, have you seen Aleister Black? Carmelo says, I haven't, and even if I did, I wouldn't tell you. He goes on to basically say, I told you so about Aleister Black. Priest says he's going to make Black beg for forgiveness when he finds him, and says he should have never played Peacemaker between Black and Ron Killings. So Carmelo, at this point, just starts basically picking a fight with Damian Priest. Mm-hmm. Priest eventually challenges him to a match. Melo says that he's been waiting for a chance to beat a former champion. So, man, Melo, like in this episode, he, rather than feeling like, I mean, yes, he's a bit of a dick, but he also feels like he's like fearless, you know?
Yeah.
Like here he is, like a low card guy, like what, I don't know, like a foot shorter at least, you know, than Damian Priest. And here he is, like, seeing his opportunity, instigating this just to get on the match to pick a fight. Shows no fear whatsoever. I don't know how you felt.
Yeah, like, this was interesting booking because Carmelo has been all over the place. Like, when he first was drafted, it was in the first round. He immediately got a match with Cody, who shook his hand. And we thought, okay, blue chip prospect for this guy. Then, you know, fast forward to earlier this year and he's, you know, he's a kind of, he's with the Miz and it's... I don't know, he's a whipping boy in matches. And then tonight, all of a sudden, he's like fronting up to Damian Priest. And it's like, yeah, whatever, you know, I'll see you in the ring. I've been looking forward to this. This is good. And Priest is like, bring that energy to the ring. And he's, yeah, I will.
You know, I know. It's like he's showing no cowardice. It's certainly not making me hate Carmelo Hayes in any way. In fact, I'm like, wow, this guy's really tough. He's like, he's not scared at all.
I thought it was interesting, but this past few weeks with Priest and Truth and Black and now, you know, Carmelo has all been a bit weird and kind of somewhat nonsensical even.
In the case of Ron Killings, I completely agree because he was not a presence at all. Of course, we all remember last week where he got the fluke win over Aleister Black. And immediately the focus was not kept on him, but kept on Aleister Black and his feud with Damian Priest. This week he wasn't a presence at all on the show. So I wonder if that just means they've correctly steered the ship. They're out of this, like, you know, barrage of hate that they've been receiving from the audience over this Ron Killings thing. He's back. Mm-hmm. We put him on TV. Now shut up about it. Now we can move on with the storylines we actually want to tell.
That's my suspicion. He's just going to slip further down the card.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Neil, will you be going to see the new Naked Gun movie? Starring Cody Rhodes in this wig.
I haven't been in love with the trailers for this film. And I really like the original, at least one and two, Naked Gun movies, because I think that Leslie Nielsen was just a comic genius at the deadpan thing. I suppose I should show some local pride for Liam Neeson, who's from...
I never realized how close those names were. Leslie Nielsen and Liam Neeson. It's almost like a...
Yeah, it's almost like anagram. There was a misprint and that's how they cast this remake. But like Liam Neeson is from my part of the world and... Yes, he's from Ballymena, which is very close to where I live. And I suppose I should support that. But I don't know. Some of the gags in the trailer are total eye rollers. And I don't know. There was something about Leslie Nielsen just being able to carry off some of that deadpan humor that I don't know. I'm halfway intrigued by it. I might see it once it hits streaming, but I doubt I'll rush out to the theater for it.
I'm somewhat interested. I can't really say I'm interested in paying money for it, but if it appears on streaming and if I have like maybe an hour to spare, I might check it out. I mean, this wig looks absolutely ridiculous on Cody, which is very on brand, of course, for Naked Gun. And I'm curious to see how Cody does. Like, I think comedy might be something that he you might be very good at that we've seen, at least in BTE, and really not much else. So I'm kind of curious to see how he does. So a little promo for that here. Priest versus Melo is our matchup next, and we get Carmelo attacking from behind, and Priest quickly makes him pay. After a commercial break, Hayes starts stomping his feet like Shawn Michaels, setting up the sweet chin music in San Antonio, and San Antonio immediately does not respond very well to this. Melo does not hit it. Instead, later on in the match, he goes for a tilt-a-whirl head-scissors takedown, which Barrett actually does call La Mystica. Mm-hmm. So tune into CMLL and eventually Forbidden Door, potentially, for that. Melo escapes Razor's Edge. He then escapes South of Heaven again with a Codebreaker. Look at this baby face escaping all of the monster heels, big moves. He hits a frog splash for a two count, and then delivers. And then after going to the outside, Priest delivers a flatliner to Melo onto the announce table. We go back. Priest is doing an old school rope walk when Aleister Black shows up on the apron and trips Damian Priest, causing the DQ, and then hitting the Black Mass to Priest to lay him out. What did you think about the match?
I thought this match was interesting in that it goes back to what we were just talking about. Melo got an awful lot in this match. Yes, there were some heel spots with the stomping for the sweet chin music, but he did some real crowd pleasers. That it was a tremendous frog splash. He got a lot of offense in. He didn't get pinned at the end of this. So I'm kind of intrigued as to, you know, if and whether this leads to anything more for Carmelo Hayes. I kind of doubt it. But I was surprised at how much they gave him. Only for it all, of course, to just turn into, you know, Aleister Black attacking Damian Priest. And I think it was off mic, but we're told by Joe Tessitore, he said, "I heard you were looking for me."
Yeah, I to me, like, the booking of this one kind of perplexed me. I mean, I do understand it on paper because you have Damian Priest and then you have Carmelo Hayes, who's a low card guy who should be able to afford a loss, but it didn't really make me like Damian Priest more, seeing him beat up a smaller opponent who was unwilling to give up, and ultimately he did beat. So I wonder if that's intentional or if it's just poor management, poor booking.
I'd like to think it is. I mean, Carmelo Hayes is super talented, and this match actually in tiny moments reminded me of that. Hmm. He was also introduced at the start as the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal winner for this year. Which
no
of course,
more Dre chain though.
No more Dre necklace, but it is interesting to see what they might or might not do with him. Having said that, I now fully expect him to disappear for a few weeks.
We get a new promo video from the Wyatt family, of course, the Wyatt Six, I should say, this time holding the World Tag Team Championships. Loomis says that the Profits are only held together by their lust for gold. Rowan says that their bond isn't defined by blood, but their pain. Nikki says, "What about the blood that we shed?" Gacy says, "One by one, we will strip these teams of their wicked desires and burn their vanity." And then Bo Dallas says, "Let the Wyatt Six be your guide. Follow." So I felt, Neil, we've seen these sort of Wyatt Six promos before, but I felt this one was far more like one-dimensional, evil, bad guys Wyatt than we've had before. Before, I felt we were getting much more sort of like, full of like depth type of storytelling of these like real sympathetic people that have suddenly adopted these personas to mask some real sort of like trauma that they've had. This just felt much more like sort of mustache twirly, like spooky bad guy to me.
This was the point in the show where I was sort of thinking this whole show, right from the sort of car crash stuff at the beginning and the sort of clearly not real police, feels like something from a few years back, and this segment was no exception. It was very much like an old style Wyatt family promo, where it is generic, evil. You know, they share a line each. They get a line each to say about one by one, we'll strip these teams of their wicked desires. And I mean, it doesn't really mean anything. And as you said, compared with the promos that we got on the sort of VCR tapes, or the therapy sessions, where it was supposedly, you know, these personas are, as you said, there for a reason, to kind of cover up some sort of really core memory pain or something like that. None of that at all here. And yeah, I just thought, didn't really like it, didn't resonate with me.
I would say this is the type of promo, but that maybe fits more of like the sort of current tag team division, which is like sort of like where every team is kind of like one note. You know, you have like, I was about to define each team, but maybe the characteristics aren't so definable, but you can say that they are all gearing towards, and they are all in fear of the Wyatts as this sort of like unbeatable, spooky entity. So that's how the Wyatts were kind of portrayed here. And I find that kind of disappointing, since I think part of the appeal of like this incarnation of the Wyatts is that they are supposed to be these much more grounded characters who, again, have adopted these personas, but they have reason to adopt these personas. Now I feel like we're kind of robbing them of that depth, and instead we're just supposed to see them as these like ghosts that everybody else is chasing. So fine for the story they're telling, but I'm a little bit disappointed.
Yeah.
If this is the case.
Agreed.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling. We see the MFTs come out, and the crowd is immediately chanting OTC at Solo Sikoa. Solo says that tonight proves that without his guidance, Jacob is restless. Crowd is chanting the what chant, and they're chanting Fatu. Solo says he brought Jacob here initially and made him successful, and Jacob deserves none of that. Solo says Jacob is once a criminal, and he will always be a criminal. And we cut to the Tron as Jimmy is greeting Jacob in the arena as Jacob comes back from the cop car. The cops have the cop has been very kind to step out of the cop car and to give Jacob Fatu plenty of explanation here, where he says that they've reviewed the footage and they have declared that Jacob is free to handle his business. That is exactly this officer's words. Jacob responds by spitting at the cop car and says punk-ass police before heading to the ring.
Yeah.
They also gave Jacob his own San Antonio Spurs themed shirt, by the way, which only John Cena got, to my knowledge, otherwise. So we head to the ring. We get a big brawl with the MFTs and Fatu and Big Jim. Jim and Fatu double-team Tala Tonga with multiple super kicks. Jimmy finally taking Tala over the barricade. Jacob is then about to pilmanize Solo's neck with a hip attack, but JC stops it. What ends up happening is Tongaloa and JC are attacking, and they are the recipients of both a Uso splash and a double jump moonsault. So the faces end this segment on top, with JC and Tongaloa taking the beatings for the team. Not only did Tonga... So how is Solo Sikoa supposed to explain this, okay? So are we supposed to believe Solo Sikoa did this car crash intentionally? What's going on?
I don't know. In a phrase, I just don't know if we're ever going to get a proper explanation of what this was supposed to be. Like, we have... Tongaloa with a band-aid on his head. By the time we get to this in-ring portion... And that's the only evidence of anything, really. I don't know who's supposed to have been in that van or what has gone on here. And it's, I guess, it's just been thrown together. And of course, the other thing about Tongaloa is he can't catch a break. He got misidentified as Tama Tonga when he took Jimmy's splash as well.
Oh no!
And of course, he gets killed by one super kick as well. You know, he's always the whipping boy for this group.
Well, but, yeah, clearly, yeah. Tama must have been the Tongaloa. Tongaloa must have been the driver, because he's the one who actually suffered some real damage here, bleeding from his eye. Then he takes that Uso splash. Okay, he's just like he just takes all the beatings here. So this whole whodunit that's been explained in an hour, I guess I never really saw it as like a real attempt at telling a sort of like, you know, framing story.
Yeah,
and for that reason, I felt very, really like no sympathy for Jacob Fatu coming out of this, because like it happened so quickly. And
yeah,
we never hear the explanation for why the cops were suspecting Jacob Fatu of being the culprit, other than the ongoing feud that he's got going on. But we didn't see any sort of evidence, which I think would have like made us hate Solo a bit more if we could reveal later on that that was planted.
Yeah, it's just nonsense. Like he's identified as a person of interest by the police, presumably because the MFTs said it was him, but we're never told that. Mm-hmm. And then he sits in the back of a police car for a bit until the cop tells him to handle his business because they've reviewed footage and he's no longer a person of interest, but we don't hear what's on the footage either. And all of this, as you're about to recap, seems to be an excuse for Adam Pearce to be able to use the words, "You wanted this guy locked up? Well, you're going to be locked up," or something like that.
So, as Neil mentioned, Pearce comes out. He says exactly those words, and he makes for SummerSlam a cage match between Solo Sikoa and Jacob Fatu. And this is when the cops come out, and these cops, they stand next to Solo Sikoa, and Solo thinks they're about to go to the ring to arrest Jacob Fatu. Instead, these cops clearly are auditioning for something, okay? They certainly have a flair for the dramatic because they swerve us by instead turning their attention, surprisingly, to Solo Sikoa, and instead they handcuff him and take him to the police station, I suppose. So I'm assuming the footage that they reviewed showed Solo Sikoa as...
It must implicate, yes, Solo. And I mean, he's the first they arrest. So that's interesting, you know, but...
Yeah, I mean, this is about like one of the laziest whodunits they've ever done. They didn't even bother like faking the footage, you know,
no.
Like they didn't bother revealing the tape or anything like that.
There's no footage, no testimony, no proper accusation about what is supposed to have happened at the beginning of the show. All just to get to the lockup theme for a cage match, which does just feel like really like hyperspeed booking for SummerSlam, for the SummerSlam match.
Yeah. Okay. And whatever. I'm kind of disappointed in this cage match though is a perfectly fine stipulation for Solo versus Jacob at SummerSlam. Sure. All right. Did you happen to watch Jelly Roll and Orton on Jimmy Kimmel?
I didn't see the entire show, but I've seen the entire segment because they posted it on YouTube. So yes.
They replayed that angle here, or at least highlights of it, including Logan Paul getting put through a table by Mr. Roll. This seemed to certainly achieve, I think, what they wanted, you know, getting this like major mainstream platform to sell a big angle for SummerSlam involving some of their big celebrities and Logan Paul and Jelly Roll. Hopefully this show doesn't get canceled anytime soon, but they managed to get that benefit out of here. What did you think?
I thought the Kimmel stuff was well done. The crowd seemed to be having a lot of fun with it. Nothing went particularly wrong. Jelly Roll's choke slam through the table looked very good, and credit to Paul, obviously, for being able to do that kind of leap, you know, for that. Mm-hmm. So I think it went well, and this tag is got some crossover interest as a result, and I think that's what WWE love. They love their celebrity integration.
Yeah, I mean, this tag match has always had a reason to exist, you know, being a celebrity integration match at SummerSlam. But they managed to certainly realize the potential for it in getting this sort of you know, publicity for themselves on a mainstream platform. So good for them for that. And I guess much has been made recently of like, or many questions have been asked of Travis Scott. Doesn't sound like he's involved at all with the WWE anymore. Are you disappointed by that? Big Travis Scott fan you are, Neil?
Not at all. Not at all. Not disappointed in the least. I think that was one of the lower creative points of the entire year. A couple of them involved Travis Scott. Well, in retrospect, the first one he was there for was a big moment in itself, but you know.
They will tie
it,
up.
Explain
that
it to me.
They will tie up that loose end at some point, Neil. Okay, I'm sure when Dwayne's plan fully plays itself out.
Yes.
We, this,
if it was John, I'd play the clip. But yeah, I don't know how many steps he's ahead. So
we've got up next Alba Fire taking on Stephanie Vaquer. Of course, this match coming after Vaquer helped save Nikki Bella against the Secret Service on Raw. So Devil's Kiss, SVB, in a pretty quick showcase win for Vaquer. I mean, it was maybe a few more moves more than that, but it wasn't much more than that. After this match, Piper attacks after the bell, and Vaquer just stops the Vader bomb and drives her out of the ring. So kind of single-handedly, Vaquer was able to nullify the Secret Herbis. Next week, however, I guess there's nothing more after this. Although Nikki seems to be involved in all of this as well, Nikki Bella and Stephanie Vaquer. Mm-hmm. So we'll see maybe if there's follow-up on this on Monday.
Yeah, like you say, a very quick squash match. These two could have had a very good match, I'm sure, but that wasn't to be. It's just in furtherance of this angle. And to get Vaquer over and the Devil's Kiss, as I think described by, it's probably Barrett, as the most popular move in sports entertainment or something like that, I think, at the beginning of this match. So
I think they have a case for that.
Yeah, don't you? It's up there. The crowd love it. The announcers love it.
What is the second most popular move right now in pro wrestling?
Good question. And I don't have an immediate answer. What do you think yourself? Do you have one?
The kangaroo kick. No, I don't
know. Okay.
I have no idea.
For a time it was. The people's elbow, because he'll be back.
The Street Profits are being interviewed, and they're not ready to face the reality of them losing the title. They say they're going to get the titles back. And this is when DIY come in to basically taunt them about losing those tag titles. And we move on up next to our Fatal 4-Way to determine the number one contenders for the Tag Team Championships against the Wyatts between the Motor City Machine Guns taking on Fraxium, taking on DIY, taking on Andrade and Phoenix. All right, so we get some action immediately breaking down here involving everybody as Sabin delivers a big dive, taking us to commercial. Phoenix is notably wearing a full body suit this week, which I don't recall seeing him in before. A lot of quick action in this one with Fraxium hitting this incredible barrage of dives and double team moves all over the ring. Missile drop kick sweep combo gets a two count. This match basically feels like it's Lucha Rules because people just aren't really, they're tagging in, but everybody just kind of comes in at will. And there's a lot of fast action, multiple people in the ring at once, and it's great. Okay, second commercial break. During this commercial break, I actually happened to catch up to the broadcast. So I was able to watch this particular commercial break where Tommaso Ciampa delivers this crazy air raid crash to Axiom off of the top rope to the floor. And I believe it was like Nathan Frazier and I think it was Gargano that was there trying to catch him. And they did not catch much of Axiom. This looked like a really brutal fall. And I was really surprised that they decided to do this during a commercial break that was not seen by USA. So I don't know, man. It looked really brutal. I just questioned that choice.
I did not see that. I began the broadcast a little late. So I was kind of caught, you know, I was seeing all of the ad breaks just disappeared for me. But from what I did see of the match without the commercial breaks and, the pace this thing was happening at and the number of people involved, I guess it's very difficult to time your spots for the commercials. Like you said, Wei, this was a glorious mess, I suppose, of action, you know.
Yeah. We come back and the pace picks back up. Fraxium hits a Spanish Fly Phoenix Splash combo. DIY try to steal the pin, but Phoenix comes in and hits a code breaker to break that up. Phoenix then delivers a corkscrew dive to the outside. Andrade is about to deliver the message, but Candice LeRae distracts him. Gargano hits Ciampa with the super kick, friendly fire style, by accident. Andrade then delivers a spitting elbow to Gargano. Phoenix takes Gargano out to the floor as Andrade delivers the message to Ciampa, getting the victory. So we are getting next week a tag team title match between Andrade and Phoenix versus the Wyatt Six. What do you think?
I really enjoyed this, and it was one of those moments where I wish I had seen the commercial break portions of this match, because it was just such fun. And when you have the commercial break and then you come back and completely different people are in the ring, it's very like, what is, you know, it's very disorientating. A four-way tag team match, so that number of people, and particularly these performers, all of them, who can, you know, perform at an incredible speed, at an incredible level, with wonderful tag work as well.
They're not moving this fast during the commercial breaks. They are conserving themselves, like, with the exception of that one major aerial crash from Ciampa to Axiom, which again surprised me. But all the teams in this four-way are amazing. It does really feel to me, though, like Fraxium are on a very different level. Like, they, to me, represent the state of the art, perhaps in the industry right now, and in high flying and in coordination. But man, like, this tag team division continues to be, like, certainly the most exciting in-ring product that we're seeing on SmackDown right now. They're pretty much the only tag team division in the WWE at present, at least on the main roster.
Definitely. So. It's the only show or brand or whatever that we can call it a division, because you need more than two teams.
Yeah, NXT's
I would argue more than three.
NXT has a tag team division, but I'm not like this, not as good as this. So next week in Cleveland for SmackDown, we've got that tag title match. We've got Roxanne Perez taking on Alexa Bliss. That's the other half of that tag team match coming up at SummerSlam. Logan Paul, Drew McIntyre, Randy Orton, and Mr. Roll will be appearing live.
Jelly, he is the short form, I think, that I heard a couple of times during this show.
Jelly, okay. Jelly. I prefer Roll.
Fair. That's fair. I do hope, now seeing that this is a title match next week, I do hope they have these titles on the line at SummerSlam with two nights. It's, you know, and those titles not having been up for grabs at WrestleMania, I think it would be a shame if we don't get this sort of talent at SummerSlam.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's two nights. They have a lot of matches to fill, so we'll see if they announce something there.
It's G1 Climax season, and that means the Post Wrestling Cafe has you covered with podcasts covering every single tournament match. Plus, Rewind Away goes back to review the best of the WWF Volume 16. We'll also have reviews of UFC 318, TNA Slammiversary, a special Ask Away edition, and of course, XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, ad-free with the news of the week and your feedback. Sign up now at postwrestlingcafe.com.
We get a contract signing between John Cena and Cody Rhodes. Cody comes out, doesn't even speak, quickly signs the contract. Then he starts talking. He says he's in Texas, so he talks about Texas. He says his dad was a Texan. His brother was a Texan. They were outlaws, and he wanted to be just like them, but he became something different. He became WWE Undisputed Champion. He posted something on social media this week that he says was overanalyzed. What he wrote was, "Do not flinch, and thank you for riding with me." I didn't really catch wind of the controversy of this tweet. Did you?
No, Daniel? Not at all. I wasn't aware of the tweet until he mentioned it, and then I looked it up. And then I wondered why there would have been any overanalysis of this. But
I guess, like, were people expecting that he was, teasing a retirement or something like that by saying thank you?
I don't know.
Anyway, apparently this was controversial. It was overanalyzed. He said, "Do not flinch," simply might have been for himself. He didn't flinch when he returned to WWE. He didn't flinch in his pec tear match in the Hell in a Cell. He didn't flinch against the Beast.
The Beast, yeah.
The Beast, yes. So we're at least calling him the Beast now. He did not flinch when he won the Rumble twice. Not when he faced Jey Uso, Randy Orton, and not when politics and the final boss came for his soul and his spot. So did you take any sort of significance in this, yet another mention from Cody about The Rock?
A little bit. And I did find the Lesnar reference notable as well, because I feel like the company, I don't think Lesnar is the toxic product, perhaps, that some fans might think he is. I wouldn't rule out them booking him if he were willing at all. And his name has been dropped several times in fairly recent history. The Rock thing, yes, I think that is also notable.
The fact that he saved it for last, again, continuing to just emphasize Dwayne as the biggest obstacle, other than Cena, that he's had to face so far. suggest to me that they are still intentionally dangling that loose end for us to maybe want to see resolved at some point, maybe in the near future, maybe even like something at SummerSlam. I mean, it's a show that's big enough that you could expect a Dwayne Johnson to make an appearance. Mm-hmm. John Cena happens to be still somewhat affiliated with Dwayne, right? So is this a tease? Could we start speculating about Dwayne Johnson being involved in the main event here?
I would not rule it out. It depends, of course, on his availability and everything else.
Right.
But if he's available, the company will always use him, I think, if he is. And this is the first two-night SummerSlam. I think they're going to want to make that established as a big deal, you know, that it will be annually a two-night site fee and event. And, you know, he's probably the biggest card they could play.
He says he didn't flinch for all those times, but he did flinch at WrestleMania 41 against John Cena. And he ends by saying that SummerSlam is the biggest match of his life. This prompts John Cena to come out in his full Spurs outfit. He says, stop the music. And unlike all his other recent appearances, he does not speak in his usual heel character voice at all. He speaks in his John Cena voice, real John Cena voice. And he says he has some bad news tonight. He will not be at SummerSlam. He had to take it to the top of the chain of command, but he has to film a movie in New York for Netflix. Everybody knows about that. He has talked. He says he's emotionally exhausted, and they all feel it's best that he does not compete at SummerSlam. At this point, like, Lee Fitting tries this like really cheesy, like half-dissolved split screen with both of their faces on TV. He did not go back to that much later on, so... I appreciate the experimentation, but maybe this one not necessarily hitting. Cena says Cody will get his rematch, but they could do it in Paris or Perth or something like that. He can't in good faith sign this contract because once he signs it, he has to appear at the show. He knows people are upset, but there's nothing he can do. This is a tough decision, but this is what's best for business right now. He says it's really hard to be here tonight because physically and emotionally, this is all that he can give everybody. So he says good night as he starts walking up the ramp, and Cody chases after him and starts attacking him. They brawl. Cena grabs the title to attack Cody. Cody grabs the title from Cena, knocks him down. Cena clearly getting his hands up for this one, but he does knock him down. Cody then goes up top and puts Cena through a table by delivering a big splash. Cody then grabs Cena's hand, puts a pin in it, and signs the contract, completely legally binding, no duress existing in the WWE legal universe, nor forgery, I suppose, in this case. Nope. Cody then tells Cena, who's unconscious, check the fine print, John. This is not just a match. It's a street fight. As we... get a close-up on John Cena with a little bit of blood on his forehead somehow through all of this. So a very ridiculous bit of sports entertainment in this contract segment, about as ridiculous as you can really get for a contract signing. But what did you think about the overall?
I think it was fun, though. I mean, the level of goofiness in this entire show, and I've mentioned several instances of it, was higher than usual. Mm-hmm. It was very WWE.
Very cartoonish. You know,
the cops, the fake cops, all of that, and right up to this notion that you could grab someone's hand and scribble their name and that's illegal, that's some sort of binding contract. But it was kind of fun, and I thought this was some of the better heel work that Cena has done, rather than the one-note villain who, you people promo to the fans. I thought this kind of fake sincerity about, a cowardly way of getting out of SummerSlam was sort of effective. I think they went off on a reasonably high note, I guess.
So if this was like the segment that I think we had going into the build to WrestleMania, like the lead up to WrestleMania, I wonder what the reception would be. I wonder what my own feelings would be on it. But at this point, I think they've established like... Cena as such a overall like pretty cartoonish villain that a segment this ridiculous, I think, just kind of fit the tone. And like you, Neil, I found it entertaining for the tone I've come to expect for these John Cena villain segments. And I thought it felt big enough. I think I would give him credit in like
feeling like Cena is at least making an attempt to make every segment feel somewhat unique and somewhat memorable. Obviously, famously, the pipe bomb one that we saw recently with Punk. Now doing something like this, I think every time he's going out there, he's trying to do something that is like at least somewhat inventive and somewhat maybe fun for him to attempt that might be different from what came before. So that is the match. What do you think about the stipulation? Street fight.
Fun, yeah. Because it will involve incredible amount of bells and whistles, and that is what we need for a main event, which it will be of probably the Sunday, to be entertaining. A straight-up wrestling match involving John Cena and anyone, however good they are, is not wonderful. And I think even with bells and whistles, you know, I hate to draw the straight comparison. It sounds tribal. I don't mean to be. But the main event of All In was incredible. The main event of, I think the main event of Evolution is probably a better comparison because it's the same company. The main event of Evolution was really, really good that same weekend. Some of the main events we've had are WWE PLEs involving Cena and his opponent of that particular month, whether it was Punk or whoever, have, even with all of the chicanery and smoke and mirrors, have not been great. So, you know, there has to be some stipulation here to make this into something that isn't just ref bump belt shot again. But I fully expect there to be more. We've talked about The Rock. We've talked about other possibilities. I also think it's getting close to the time where they want to turn Cena back to a face. And I'm intrigued to see how they do that too. It's a good stipulation because we need something else.
Yeah, certainly. I don't think at this point we'd expect a straight up, you know, rematch, right? And I think having any sort of aid for a John Cena main event is, it can only help. And I have no doubt that they will structure and plan for this match to be exciting, just given whatever props they can use, whatever run-ins they can use. I think the big question is this going to be the end of the John Cena heel run? Can we get a turn, and can we get Cody title win to lead to that? Or is this a continuation of the John Cena heel run? Does Cody lose this one yet again? Can you see Cody losing this one again?
I could. I think that's going to be difficult to book without fans, either in attendance and particularly watching, to not shit on. But I'm more intrigued by turning Cena and how they might do it. And I think the street fight stipulation opens up all avenues to do that with the personnel. Cena doesn't really have a stable of people that can help him with run-ins.
What about Travis Scott?
Well, just don't wish that on us.
Logan Paul. Okay, those are his friends now,
I guess. It would be interesting to see. I have no idea how they'll book it. And I'm not much one for fantasy booking either. I like to sort of see what they'll throw at us. But I think it'll be interesting to see if this is the way, the method of turning Cena face or not. If he wins this match through heel tactics again, that's going to be a difficult end to that weekend, I think, from a reception point of view for fans, but we'll see.
Yeah, I can honestly see either scenario play out. I think if they are maybe buckling to like the negative reception that some may be giving a John Cena heel run, maybe I could see them, you know, doing this early. I would also suggest maybe, like, it feels to me like it wouldn't make sense for Cena to go on this campaign to end his career with the championship and for it to end with, what, like 4 months left? You know, it just kind of feels like it'd be entirely losing steam. So I can't imagine, like, in my opinion, I suspect that that might not be the actual original plan. And for that reason, I still wonder if they would go through with it by having Cena lose early, because it feels like the 4 months remaining will be a little bit pointless. Again, of course, I know it's not, but like, what is his next story if he does lose the championship? You know,
what's his sort of driving momentum heading towards that final match?
Yeah, it's a very good question, because this is a, it's not, you hand someone a blank sheet of paper and say, book John Cena's final, his retirement run. And by the way, it's a year you've got to do. And he's got however many dates it was to begin with. Mm. It was plenty. Not an easy thing to do. And I think the heel turn was not a particularly bad idea. I just don't think it was executed very well or with a lot of logic. And when he came back from that, a lot of the early heel stuff was trying to sort of establish some kind of motivation for him. And it did, that didn't, you know, the you people stuff, you turned on me, you never really liked me anyway. That didn't land very well. So I have liked the more recent stuff, including tonight, where it was a wee bit more creative. And like you mentioned before, the pipe bomb sort of themed promo, stuff like that. It all has got a little bit more creative. But yeah, it is difficult. There's still months to go. And this title, yeah.
Hmm. So Cena is not advertised for next week, but he will be on the Go Home show on August the 1st, the night before SummerSlam weekend. So we'll see what sort of contribution they might have for this feud next week, maybe a video package of some sort or something like that. But don't expect to see John Cena live in the flesh until SummerSlam weekend. All right, so that is our review of tonight's edition of SmackDown. Any overall thoughts, Neil?
I thought, like I said before, it's just the risk of repeating myself, a slightly goofy storytelling-wise mm-hmm. episode of SmackDown. Felt a little old school in that regard, not very Paul Levesque-ish to me. They did rush some of the build for the next 2 weeks. And in ring, though, if you're looking for some action there, the four-way tag match was very, very easily the best wrestling on the show.
Yeah, I'll say in terms of star power, I felt like this was a big show because it was anchored by Cena and Cody and a big segment involving those two. In terms of tone, yeah, I definitely felt like this was a much more cartoonish like edition of WWE than I think we've been used to, at least a little bit more. I certainly did not enjoy the carb whodunit segment. I thought that was poorly done and did not feel like weighty at all. And the main event segment, I did enjoy overall a bit more, but you kind of have to maybe accept and be open to just, again, a much more sort of a cartoonish world where this sort of contract signing is possible and completely legally binding. So there we go. Those are our thoughts, everybody. Do stick around in the Post Wrestling Cafe as we go through some of your feedback. Earlier in our XL edition, throughout our news discussion, we were able to spend some time talking about Marcus Buff Bagwell and his unfortunate leg amputation, but also maybe, having watched the Maven video, giving some of our thoughts on perhaps the optimism that he seems to be expressing at this point, given, you know, what may otherwise be a very unfortunate incident. We talked a little bit about AJ Styles being advertised for TNA Slammiversary and what that might mean for both AJ Styles and also TNA itself. We gave our thoughts on WWE's Unreal's new trailer and maybe some of our expectations for that particular show. Talked a little bit about Will Ospreay, AEW All In, and also AEW Dynamite ratings as well. So that was about a 36-minute discussion tacked on at the beginning of this particular show, ad-free and time-stamped for all Post Wrestling Cafe listeners. As I mentioned, sign up for a free account at postwrestlingcafe.com to get this weekend's G1 coverage from Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson for absolutely free. And then if you really like it, really like us, consider signing on for $6 a month at postwrestlingcafe.com for everything. All right, everybody, see you guys in the feedback section.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
First, there was Tuesday. Then, there was Taco Tuesday. Now at Wendy's, there's Takis Tuesday. Get a new Takis Fuego meal, a.k.a. Takis Fuego Chicken Sandwich, Fuego Fries inspired by Takis, a bag of Takis Fuego Chips, a small drink, and also a small Frosty Classic. Yes, you can get that any day, but on Takis Tuesday, the Frosty is free. Make every Tuesday a Takis Tuesday. Gotta be Wendy's.
Limited time only. Participating U.S. Wendy's includes 1 ounce Takis Fuego Chips while supplies last. Takis and Fuego trademarks are used under license.